Bonjour, bonjour, and welcome to another episode of EveryoneHatesMarketers.com, the marketing podcast for marketers, marketing consultants, founders, and tech people who are just sick of shady, aggressive marketing. I'm your host, Louis Grenier. In today's episode, you'll learn how to write and launch a book. My guest today has been on the show before and has just launched her new book, which is called Obviously Awesome, How to Nail Product Positioning so Customers Get It, Buy It, and Love It. I actually pre-bought it a few weeks ago, finally got to read it this weekend. It's really good, but surprisingly enough, we are not going to talk about product positioning today. Instead, we're going to talk about the process that my guest took to actually write the book, launch it, and I know she made a few mistakes along the way or a few things she would do differently. So super happy to have you, April Dunford, on board again. Welcome back.
Hey, it's good to be back. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it probably feels like home again. Like it feels like
that's it.
The podcast you're going to come back to every 6 months or so.
Sure.
To talk about your fuck-ups.
Yeah, that's right.
Like a therapy session.
So, like therapy, that's what it is. It's like therapy.
Why did you decide to launch a book?
Well, you know, there's a handful of things. Like I had this idea for a book on positioning, like maybe 6 years ago, I would say is 6 or 7 years ago is the first time I thought about it. And my original thinking was that there isn't a good methodology for positioning. And so I would be spending a lot of time talking to companies about positioning, and I'd be mentoring people and they'd be asking me questions about positioning. And I didn't have a good book to point them to. There was a great book out called Positioning, The Battle for Your Mind by these guys, Reisentrout, depending on how you want to pronounce it. And that was published in 1982. So before the internet, 1,000 years ago, but it's still a great book. And I still think if you want to learn something about positioning, that's the book you should start with. You should read it. What frustrated me about that book, though, is that it didn't actually give you any clues how to do it. So you read the book and you'll be like, oh my gosh, positioning is so important and it's so critical. And look at all these examples where they went from here to here, but I wasn't any closer to knowing how to do it. And so I knew how I was doing it as a vice president of marketing. And I thought, this is crazy. Someone should write the book on this. And so then, you know, 5, 6, however many years ago, I thought, well, maybe that's me. Maybe I'm going to write the book on it. But, you know, thinking you're going to write a book on something and write a book on something are actually two totally different things. But that's where the idea came from. The idea came from, this is a necessary book. This book should exist. And if no one else is going to write it, I'm going to write it. So that was my original thought.
So that was a kind of a grandiose idea, in a sense, like trying to help the world as well, like to learn a better way of positioning their product and all of that.
It's kind of selfish too, right?
So that was exactly what I was getting to.
You get sick of answering the same damn question over and over again. So, you know, so people are coming in and they're like, so how do I position my startup? And you're like, oh, okay, let's start from the beginning, right? And I'm doing the same thing over and over and over again. And I'm thinking, God, it'd be great if I could just, you know, slide this sucker across the table and say, read this and come back to me with smarter questions, people. Like, So there was that idea. So one was that, you know, I thought it should exist in the world. Two, I keep seeing that I'm answering the question over and over and over again. And, you know, and again, three, you know, I like the idea of, I'm going to write a book and it's going to be this useful thing. And people will say, hey, I know you did this useful thing. That's kind of the idea.
You're a consultant as well, right? So you make money by selling your services. And I suppose
I do, but actually when I originally conceived of doing the book, I wasn't consulting at that time. Uh-huh. So, but you know, now as a consultant, obviously the book is a good calling card as a consultant. If you want to know how I think about stuff, you can read the book. And if you disagree with it, then don't call me. But if you do, then great. And here's how I can actually help you. The book in some ways is kind of the self-help manual for folks that can't afford me or too small for me. You know, you can sort of self-serve, buy the book and do your own stuff, and you don't have to call me at all. But I've been that person internally to try to do the positioning, and it's hard to drive it yourself internally. There is some magic that happens when you get an outside person in to help facilitate it, which is what I do as a consultant. But you know, the book itself, you know, I'm sure will drive some consulting business, but it's also going to be a thing I could give to folks or sell to folks for whopping $7 to companies that are too small or too broke to hire me as a consultant.
Have you raised your prices yet?
My consulting prices?
Uh-huh.
Maybe next year.
All right.
I'm thinking about next year. You know, it's a funny thing about consulting to startups, because they mainly it's the CEOs that hire me, and they all talk to each other, and nobody wants to get ripped off. And so at an early stage, I decided I'm gonna pick a price that's fair for my kind of base workshop offering, and everybody pays the same. It doesn't matter if I think, oh, you're super funded and you got all kinds of money, or, oh, you're bootstrapped and you don't have any money. Everybody pays the same. And that was a deliberate choice on my part, because I know how these guys buy stuff. They, you know, they talk to everybody else and they say, well, what did you pay? And so if my pricing is flexible, everyone's going to know, and everyone's going to be pushing me to give them the lowest price I've ever given. So right now, my pricing is, you know, it just is what it is. I don't negotiate it. It's the same for everybody. Will it go up now that I got a book out? Yeah, probably. You know, I'm pretty busy right now. And so I think if I start getting too busy to get folks on the calendar, then yeah, maybe that would facilitate a price increase.
Good problem to have. So
not yet, though. So book your consulting now before prices go up.
since the book launched, which is a few days ago at the time where we are recording this episode, how many copies did you sell, just roughly?
Well, so one thing I'll tell you about books is that it's kind of hard to count. and everybody wants to know this number, and I'm a little bit like, I'm not really sure I can count. So I can give you a few numbers. So one thing I'll tell you is that most folks that self-publish a book, which I did, will only publish on Amazon. And if you only publish on Amazon, it's quite easy to track how many books you've sold. There's a little bit of a lag, because they don't actually show the book as, if it's a paper book, they don't actually show it as sold until it ships. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, my stuff has all been delayed in shipping. It's super annoying. But I didn't just do Amazon, partly because I'm in Canada, and there's a big bookstore here in Canada called Chapters Indigo, and they have their own ebook reader. And so I wanted to make it available there as well, which means you actually have to set up with another distribution channel beyond Amazon to mm-hmm. service like those kind of booksellers, as well as Barnes and Nobles and whatever. And so I also have that set up there. And then I use that distributor also for buying books if, you know, if I'm speaking at an event, and like I was just at an event in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and it was so fun. And they bought a couple hundred books to give away and do a book signing and whatever. And so so those books come from either that other distributor, or I can flow them through this other thing called 1-800-CEO-Reads. And so I have multiple channels is mm-hmm. the short answer to this question. And so adding up the books across the multiple channels is a bit of a thing. So I would say I could measure the books in thousands, but I'm not sure I can give you an exact number on where it is. I will say that it exceeded my expectations. So I did not write this book with the idea that it's like frickin' Harry Potter and, you know, this is going to be some kind of like New York Times bestseller. That's not the kind of book it is. It's kind of a niche book on a niche topic. It's really written for marketing people and founders in tech. I'm more focused on B2B. So, you know, if you're B2C, I'm not even sure, you know, there aren't a lot of B2C examples in there. And so I'm not actually kind of that worried about the number of books. I am very worried about, do people think it's a useful book? because I spent a lot of time writing the darn thing. And so I, you know, my hope is that people read it and they think it's useful. If it only sells a small number of copies, I'm cool with that. But if the people that bought it read it and think it's like, this is a useful thing for my business, I'm glad this got written, then I'm feeling pretty good. And then, yeah, right. Would it be great if that got me a spot where I get better quality clients, or maybe I can put my prices up, or maybe I'm, you know, a bit more booked up than I am now. I don't know. I'm pretty booked up already, but you know, that stuff is all good too. But I was not trying to optimize for book sales. Let's put it that way. There's right. a very specific way you do a book launch if you want to optimize for book sales. And I did not do that.
Okay. So let's go through the step you took to actually write the book, because you say it took you a long time. And so let's try to retrieve the steps you took and maybe the mistakes you made along the way.
So many mistakes.
Right. So step one, you started to think about a positioning book 6 years ago. So what do you advise folks who are listening to this right now, thinking that they have also something to say, they like potentially to write a book, even self-publish it? What is step one? What do you need to start with?
Well, so I had this idea. So I had the idea for the book, and the idea is I'm going to teach you how to do positioning. That's it. That's the whole idea. And because I know how to do positioning, I'm going to write a book. It's going to teach you how to do it. But then I very quickly discovered that just because I know how to do positioning doesn't mean I know how to teach anybody how to do it. Mm-hmm. And so I went and so the first thing I did was I wrote the speech version of this book because I do a bit about public speaking, and I wrote the speech version of it, and it was terrible. Nobody could understand what the heck I was talking about. And you could tell from the reactions when I got off stage, people are like, so you're saying it's like messaging then? I'm like, no, I'm saying, no, that's not what I'm saying at all. And so the talk didn't work. And then I was like, man, well, this book isn't going to work if it doesn't even work as a talk. It's not going to work as a book. And I was also blogging quite a bit at the time. And some stuff I wrote seemed to work and people liked it and they understood it and they thought it was useful. Again, my bar is like useful, right? Like, do you think this is useful? Would you use this? I'm not going for, does this get the most likes? Because you can write something sensational that's wrong that gets a lot of likes. Like I read an article yesterday that was talking about, well, it was kind of sort of talking about segmentation is what it was and niche markets and things. It's wrong. Like, based on everything I know across 7 startups and launching 16 products, the advice in that article is wrong. But is it popular? Is it getting shared all over the place? Yes, because it kind of sounds like it makes sense. And yeah, so anyways, you can write stuff that's popular that's wrong and stupid. So anyways, I'm writing about this stuff and I think I'm getting better at the ideas. But I would say I probably spent a year where I thought what I was doing was writing the book. What I was really doing is not writing any book. I was trying to figure out how do you actually teach this stuff in a way that people get it.
Yeah.
And that took way longer than I thought.
So I think that's a really interesting concept right there. You didn't start by writing a book. You just start to, you know, from the topic you've chosen, and perhaps this is something we can talk about briefly. The topic you've chosen, you've decided already, can I teach it? You know, can I teach it? Yeah, I don't know, podcast interviews.
Well, and can that's I teach because it? That's yeah. the kind of book I was trying to write, right? So I was trying to write this book. I'm going to teach you how to do this thing. I think it would be different if I had this book that's like, you know, sometimes people have like a concept and they're going to interview a bunch of people and then they're going to say what those people said and they're just going to kind of noodle on a concept. This is not that kind of book. Mine was, I'm going to teach you a process. Step one, we do this. Step two, we do this. Step three, we do this. Otherwise, I don't think this book needs to exist because the conceptual book already exists. That's Reason Trout, Positioning the Battle for Your Mind. If all you want to know is what positioning is, buy that book. Don't buy my book.
But then still, it will still work. I think if you're doing a series of interview and you create a summary out of it to have a new concept, you still want to know whether this has legs and you still want to test it out using
Does anyone get it?
Yeah, right? Like it's. I think it's incredibly risky to launch a new concept via a book if you've never tested before.
Yeah, in could front you of a live audience. That would be crazy. Yeah.
Well, I think a few people did that.
I think people do that. I think sometimes people, it's really easy to write a book right now. It's never been easier, right? Like you can get, there are these services out there that they'll basically just interview you and they'll write the book for you even, and then figure out, and all you got to do is pay. Like it just takes money. And so it's really easy to write a book right now. So I do know folks that have kind of written a book like that, but you know, they have different goals than I have, right? Like they're writing it. Some of them are like CEOs of a company and they're writing it kind of as, this is our point of view as a company. It's almost like a piece of collateral or, you know, a chunky piece of business content. And, you know, they don't care about selling a lot of those books either. They're going to buy their own books and use them for marketing purposes, and that's fine. But if you're trying to write a book, like for me, it was like, okay, I'm trying to teach people something. And it seemed natural to me to, let's just try to teach an audience. And if that works, then I'll write down what I'm saying to the audience. But, you know, at the beginning, I'm talking to the audience. They're not getting it. And then I started teaching a class at a local incubator. And that was also painful at the beginning. Like, nobody's getting it. Like, literally, like the first one I did was so painful. I stood up and I thought it was genius, too. Like, I had like 100 slides and I had 2.5 hours. And I stood up there and like basically just, I'm just going to hit you people with everything I've got. And at the end, literally, people were like, so what's positioning again?
Must have been tough for you, no?
I failed.
how did you feel about it?
Well, you know what? I'll tell you one thing that you have to be careful about. If you're a good, comfortable public speaker, you will sometimes get positive feedback on your speech, even if people understood nothing. Because they just liked the way you said it, but they didn't actually understand a damn thing you said. So sometimes you'll get people walk up and go, wow, that was great. That was great. So you're saying positioning is like a tagline then? And you're like, oh, shit. Nobody understood anything. So you have to make sure you check your ego a little bit. Because sometimes people will say, oh, that was really, really great. But Canadians are the worst for this, by the way. Like, they're super polite and super nice. And so they'll come up and say, yeah, that was really, really great. And then they'll ask you a question and it's clear, like, oh, my God. You didn't understand a thing. So, yeah, so I did the course and that was bad. But it got better, right, over the course of a year. You talk to people afterwards and you say, they got this bit, but they didn't get that bit, or they got this. Sometimes they would come back and ask you a question and it would kind of spark like, like at the beginning, I was using a lot of very technical, real company examples of companies that I had worked at. Okay. And I still like to use those, but depending on the crowd, sometimes it helps to do an example that has nothing to do with technology. Like I'm literally talking about cake. And that's sometimes helpful for a tech crowd that can't separate the concept from the actual product you're talking about. And so if you give them some generic thing like cake, they don't know anything about the cake business or how to make cakes or anything about cake. And then you can sort of get people's idea around the concept and then say, okay, now let's take that and apply it to this artificial intelligence thing. And, you know, and that helped a lot. And so I just got smarter at learning what worked and what didn't work about teaching people how to do it.
When was it? When was that?
But that was, again, we're going back like 5 years or something. So, so then I get to the point where I think I'm pretty good at teaching it. And then I'm like, okay, I got this book. So, so I talked to a bunch of people that had published books and they all said the same thing. They said, look, you gotta go with a publisher because self-publishing is bullshit. And if you want to really do this properly, you want a publisher, not just any publisher either. You want a good publisher. And in order to do that, you need to write up a book proposal and you need to get an agent. And so I had a handful of people tell me that's what I needed to do. So I spent a year trying to do that. So like I got a full-time job and this is like my side hustle thing. And so I spent a year writing a book proposal, talking to a bunch of book agents and talking directly to a bunch of publishers.
So let me just clarify one thing on talking about book proposal. So in the business sense, when you write a business book, usually what publisher would do is you would be asked to write a book proposal like you would like a traditional marketing plan. Whose is it for? What's the unique angle of this book? Exactly. How are you planning to launch it and to promote it? And then a rough outline. So basically like a 50 pager or even more, right?
Right, right. I think mine was like about 50 pages. Yeah. And it was like, this is my audience. This is what the book's about. These are other books that compare to this book. This is the outline. This is a sample chapter, you know, all this stuff. And the idea is, you know, you got to go sell your book. First, you sell it to an agent, and then the agent and you together go and sell it to a publisher. Mm-hmm. And so I got literally nowhere with that. And looking back on it now, it's not surprising, because I'm not writing freaking J.K. Rowling here. I'm writing a super niche book for a super niche audience. And what the publisher and the agent want to know is, you're going to be the next Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. Like, they want you to sell like a million books. And if you can't convincingly tell them, I'm going to sell like a million books, they kind of don't want to know. They're not interested, because the whole game for them is volume. And so I spent a year. It took me like a year to figure that out. Like, at first I thought, maybe my book proposal is not very good, you know, so I'll rewrite that. Or maybe I'm talking to the wrong agents. So then I meet some new agents. And I'm like, maybe I'm talking to the wrong publishers. I meet publishers. Now, I do know people that have published books that, you know, didn't sell very many books. Like I think that's fine for some publishers, but they might sign you up if you've written another book that was really popular, and they'll take a flyer on you. But if you're a first-time author and you can't make a convincing case that you're going to, you know, at least get a good run at selling a ton of books, they kind of don't want to talk to you.
So what happened to the, just briefly on this, so you contacted agents, you contacted then the publishers. What was the feedback? Yeah. Did they tell you explicitly, listen, this is too niche for us, or they just never replied? What was the feedback?
Lots of them just don't reply. Lots of them, like, I'll tell you, the book business kind of deserves to die, because there's a lot. I got a lot of really dumb questions. Like, I literally had people ask me, how many followers do you have on Twitter? Oof. Like, that's some kind of an indicator of how many books I'm going to sell. And I was like, people, you gotta be kidding me, right? And then they asked me, how many people are on your mailing list? And if the answer to that question wasn't 10 million, it was the wrong answer. Like, it was, they think they know something about how to sell books, but they don't actually know. Like, what they're trying to figure out is, can you sell the books? Mm-hmm. With your audience, like, how much of a following do you already have? And so they're hoping that you say, oh, I'm super famous, I got bazillion followers on everything and blah, blah, blah. And so I could have made up all those numbers. Like, they didn't check anything. So I could have walked in and said, yeah, I got 20 million people on my mailing list, 20 million. And I probably could have got a book deal out of that, because nobody ever asked to verify it. Nobody, like, honestly, I got some really stupid questions. So there was that. So anyways, I spent about a year doing that. And then I started thinking, maybe this, like, traditional publishing is not what I want to do. And so then I went and started talking to some folks that had self-published their books, and in particular, folks that were consultants. So by this point, I've started to transition to consulting. And so I was thinking about the book more as, you know, kind of a calling card for, this is what I do, this is what I think, this is my intellectual property, maybe you should hire me as a consultant. So I talked to some people that, you know, had self-published their books, and that was super inspiring. So I started to investigate that. But right when I started to investigate that, I had kind of a weird little detour where I hooked up with a guy that like teamed with a guy. We didn't hook up.
Yeah.
Just to be clear. Not like that. It's not that kind of a show. I have a friend of mine that had published a very successful book, also for startups. And he was thinking about a new book, and I was thinking about doing this book. And so we kind of yacked and said, hey, maybe we do this book together. And he's already got a relationship with a publisher. He's already got a big email list. It's not 10 million, but it's big enough. And he's already a known entity. And so if we wrote the book together, then maybe we would do it through his publisher and do it like that. And I wasted maybe a year trying to take a run at that. And that didn't work. mainly because we're just really different people. And we thought about we were thinking about the topics differently. His process for writing a book was really different than mine. I had a very specific idea. And, you know, you can see it in the book now that the idea for the book has not changed. So I had this very specific idea of what this book was going to be. And then, you know, and then this poor guy comes in and he's like, hey, what about these other things? And I'm like, no, the book is going to be this. So I think I was a shitty writing partner. Anyway, so we tried to make this thing work for about a year and then finally made the call like, yeah, this probably isn't turning into a book with the two of us. And so that describes the first like sort of 4 or 5 years of me trying to write a book, all of that, you know,
so maybe like I'll 4 or 5 years. So to summarize,
probably long amount of time, like literally years. And all the way through that, people would say, hey, what are you doing? And I say, yeah, I'm writing a book. I was literally not writing a book. Like, you know, all of this work leads to the book, but was I actually sitting down and writing the book? Like,
no. So,
not really, no.
Let me summarize briefly what you said. So first of all, you had this idea, like you wanted to specialize in positioning. I mean, this is something that you really want to write about. You saw a gap, you saw clearly that there was an opportunity there. You started to teach it or try to teach the practicality of it to crowds, like in public speaking, because that's one of your strengths, right? So you try to explain that over slides and public speaking. You got a lot of feedback back and forth, and like the feedback loop kept just, you know, rolling and rolling. You got more and more feedback. You start to improve the way you were explaining. Then you started to get in touch with agent and publisher. Didn't work out. They wanted you to be the next J.K. Rowling. And then the last step is you tried to partner up with someone who had those connections. But again, you had such a precise idea of the book you wanted to write. And I think people have noticed by now, if they've never heard from you, you have a strong personality as well. I can understand why partnering up with someone else might not have worked.
Oh, yeah, no, I would think I was a crappy collaborator on that project. So it didn't work. So finally I said, forget it. And then so after we split, then I literally sat down in earnest. I rewrote the book from scratch, which took me maybe 8 months. And then I hired a company to help me self-publish the book. From the moment I began the rewrite to hiring the company was about 8-9 months. And then working with the company, it took me about a year to get it actually out.
Okay. So let's go through those steps, because I think this is when we're getting into the thick of it, the meat of it.
Yeah.
When you say writing a book, right? To me, it sounds like a fucking mountain to climb, right?
No, it's not. It's actually the easiest part.
Okay, so let's go through that. So,
actually, like, writing the book is so easy. It's all the other things that suck.
Okay, so practically speaking, it took you 8 to 9 months. Practically speaking, how did you go about it? Did you sit in front of your computer every day for an hour? How did you go about it?
I did. I sat in front of the computer every day for an hour, a couple hours. Sometimes I would have like half a day blocked off because I knew there was a section on the book I just needed to sit down and work through. You know, I had sometimes on the weekend, I would just be, you know, when kids aren't around or whatever, I'm going to bang out a chapter on this book. Like writing it was pretty easy. And part of that is because I had done all this work before. So I knew what my methodology was at that point. I knew what the steps were. I knew that I was going to have to tee up X, Y, Z before I could get to the steps. Like that's where all, like it would have taken me longer if I hadn't have done all that work of workshopping the thing and doing talks on the thing and working through consultant clients on the thing. Like by the time I sat down to do the last, you know, front to end write on this book, I knew exactly the way this thing was going to lay out. I wrote an outline, and then I just wrote on the outline and had the manuscript done.
Wow.
Then I had already decided I'm going to self-publish because I'd looked at doing a publisher and it didn't work. At one point, I actually did have one of these publishers come back to me and say, yep, we do want to do your book now. And we had a discussion about it and I still said no. Because at that point I was like, no, I think I'm a control freak. I actually want way more control over all this stuff. And I don't want any partners, including you, publisher people. And so and then I hired a company that is kind of like a one-stop shop that does cover art, interior design, editing, like macro editing, micro editing. They get you all set up on Amazon plus all these other distribution channels, like the whole soup to nuts thing, and you just pay them.
Okay. So before that,
so that's the route I decided to go, because I knew I was too damn busy to do all those things separately. And I was my choices were hire a bunch of separate people to do these things, like hire an editor, hire an artist, hire whatever. And then I found these folks that do everything. So I was like, okay, perfect. I just throw money at you and you guys solve this problem. That's how we're going to do it.
All right. Before we talk about this step, because I think it's an interesting thing, I'm not sure I've heard of that way of doing things before. The writing bit. So you say it's easy. You consider it to be easy. But I think, as you said, the difficulty kind of wore off because you were consulting on this methodology. You spoke about this methodology for years. Right?
Yeah, exactly. And if I hadn't had that, I think it would have been a lot harder to sit down and bring it. This was also kind of like the fourth time I wrote the book, right? Like, so I wrote the book. It wasn't totally finished, whatever. Then I realized I didn't know how to teach it. So then I threw it out and I wrote it again. And then I, you know, brought in this partner and rewrote it again. And, you know, there was manuscripts of this book kicking around, but it you know, on the last round, I threw away all that stuff and said, forget it. I'm going to start from scratch and kind of rewrote the whole thing over 8 months.
So talk to me about the environment you were in. Like, so you were in an office, closed off, like quite silent. You had a plain text editor in front of you, or you had Word. What did you have in front of you?
I wrote the whole thing in Google Docs.
So you had Google Doc, you had a rough outline, perhaps something like that?
I had an outline. I started with an outline, chapter one, chapter two, chapter three, here's how it's going to look, and then just filled in the outline.
Uh-huh. Okay. So you had the outline, so which is kind of step one, right? I mean, that's kind of the obvious step one. You don't write a book by just writing the first line. You need kind of to figure the skeleton out of it, right?
Yeah.
So you had this outline, you had this Google Doc, and then you took like 1 hour, 2 hours a day. And did the words flow pretty well every day? Or did you have days where you're like, fuck, I can't just write anything. It makes no sense.
Totally. Yeah. And I have days like that about work in general. So that didn't stress me out. So, you know, you'd have some weeks where you didn't do anything on the book for a week because you're super freaking busy with work and others. And then you have other weeks where, you know, you got a few days off and you're banging out all kinds of stuff. It's not this nice, consistent thing. You got good days and bad days.
And in total, like how many words are we talking about for your book?
Well, so this is an interesting part. So the original thing that I sat down and wrote was gigantic. So the thing I came out with was huge, way too big, in fact. And I can't remember how many words it was, but I remember doing a calculation to see like how many pages would this book be. Mm-hmm. And it was way too many. It was like 300 pages or something. Ooh. But I kind of figured that's fine, because what I know about writing is that it's way easier to take stuff out than it is to put stuff in.
Right.
So I just put everything in it and it was all there. And my goal on this thing was to make it very short. So one thing that I've learned about my audience is they are super distracted. They don't sit down and read a great big book. If it's a whole bunch of text, they're just not going to read it. And again, my goal in this thing is I'm trying to write a thing that's useful. And so it's not going to be useful if no one's going to finish the damn book. So I originally had this manuscript and it was giant. But my goal with the manuscript was to chop it in half. Mm. Right from the beginning. But I figured we'll do that in the editing process. We'll find out where all the chaff is and we'll get rid of it. So the original thing was super, super long. And then if you buy the book now, you'll laugh because the book's a shorty. It's not a long book at all. And there's a ton of white space and it's all broken up and there's all kinds of like diagrams and things. And that's on purpose because I don't believe my folks can sit down and read 300 pages or whatever. But the original manuscript was, way longer than what I ended up with.
Yeah, and usually what happens in business books that you're reading that are like 300-page, 400-page long sometimes is that it goes through the same fucking thing over and over again. So it's not like...
Yeah, and my people don't have time for that.
Yeah, it's not a methodology, right? It's like, this is my core idea, and this is how it's applicable, and this is how it's applicable. And it just repeats and repeats and repeats. Now, there are some benefits of that in terms of memory and retention. Like, the more it's repeated in different angles, the more likely you are to remember it. But exactly as you said, people are busy, right?
No, that was not my approach to this was not that. I was like, you know what? This book is going to be exactly as long as it needs to be and not a word longer. I'm not going to repeat anything. If you want to go back and read it twice, go back and read it twice. But, you know, I saw a lot of people launch their books and even I'd get the book and the thing was so dang big that I just couldn't get through it. And I didn't want that. What I wanted is a book that you're actually going to sit down, you're going to read it, you're going to finish it. That's the goal. Uh-huh. So, but anyways, yeah, so it was longer at the beginning, but then it got short.
And do you consider yourself a good writer?
No, I'm a terrible. I'm an engineer. I'm an awful writer. My God, I'm really bad.
Like, so how did you deal with the fact, like this concept of shitty first draft, right? Like you sit down every morning or whenever you're the most productive and just dumping words that didn't necessarily make a lot of sense, but you knew you had to go through this first step. How did you deal with that?
So I just wrote the thing out, just straight, not worrying about, is it written well or am I saying this exactly perfect? I did one. I wrote the thing out, and then when it was done, I went through and did a massive edit for understandability, with the idea being I got to give this to an editor. But I've worked with editors my whole life, so I know an editor is going to make this look good, even though I can't write at all. Mm. So I did one pass for understandability, and then hilariously, I start working with the editor, and the editor says, well, I'm going to do a macro edit, then I'm going to do a micro edit. So the macro edit, I'm just going to go through, we're going to maybe change the structure a little bit and some stuff. And then you'll get a chance to review it. And then we'll go back and do line edits where we, you know, we just clean up the grammar and all that stuff. I said, great. And I'm thinking macro edit, she's not going to do anything on that because I got the structure. I know how to teach this thing. I got it. So I send it to her. She takes the thing. She keeps it for a long time, like 2 months or something. I'm like, what's going on? And then she sends me this book back. And I'm telling you, I opened this thing up and I read the whole thing. And I was like, that's an amazing book. I have no idea what that book is about. Oh. I don't know. That's somebody else's book. That's not my book. I don't actually know what that book is about.
Oh, shit.
Exactly. And I was like, fuck. This is bad. And I, in response to that, I went back and wrote the book again.
Oh, Jesus Christ. How many times have you read this fucking book?
I went back and wrote the book again because it wasn't like the editor literally couldn't understand it. And I was like, oh my God, I've written a book that no one can understand. And so then I went back and wrote it again. And that was bad. Like that was really bad. That was probably one of the worst parts. That was the worst part of the whole experience. I canceled all my clients. I took a month off. At this point, I think we're 6 months away from publishing, which it turned out we completely missed the dates for lots of reasons. But I think I'm 6 months away from publishing. And I'm like, oh my God, this is a disaster. I canceled all my stuff. I sat in a room and I did nothing for a month but rewrite that book so that I could give it to her so that she could understand it and do an edit on it. So it was terrible. And the whole time I was writing it, I had this panicky feeling like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to give it back to her. It's still not going to make sense. And I'm going to abandon this project at this point.
So in retrospect, tell me more about why did it happen, do you think?
Well, I don't know. You know, I'll be honest with you. I don't know. Like I don't know. Like part of it, some people were saying, oh, maybe it's just the editor didn't understand your stuff. And there was definitely a little bit of that. Cause I'm writing a kind of niche book, right? So it's a specialist book for specialist people. So, you know, my editor doesn't know what positioning is. And so some of it was just her not getting it. But some of it was just, you know, and I would say more of it was me just, again, not doing a great job explaining it. like that is literally the hardest part with the book. Like you got to, it's not just the idea. You got to do it in a way that's compelling and interesting and people can get it. And yeah, the first one, she just didn't get it. She wrote, she fixed what she could. She sent it back to me. I was like, oh my God, that's some other book. And I wrote it again.
Jesus. Okay.
Yeah, but it was terrible. It was literally terrible. It was so demoralizing. I was like, oh my God, this is awful, blah, 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 whatever. And then I sent it back to her the second time and it went better. It went better.
Okay.
Yeah. Then we were going at that point. It was like, okay, now we're going.
So that was less than a year ago then, was it?
That was last summer.
Okay. So that's almost around the same time that we first spoke on the podcast, I think. I remember you talking about the book and not being super, super energetic about it at this stage.
Oh, yeah. No, if you talked to me during that summer, I was probably like, yeah, man, I don't know. Oh, maybe this book comes out. Maybe it doesn't. Like, at that point, I was It's like, maybe I don't have a thing here.
At this stage, you rewrote the book like 15 times, probably something like that,
yeah,
right?
Six or seven times for sure.
So you got in touch with an editor, and which is kind of the next step, right? So I like what you're saying, because you don't seem to really, you knew from the start when you started to write this book that it wouldn't be perfect. You knew that the rule of like the shitty first draft, that you just keep writing and writing.
Oh, yeah. And that's me with writing. Like, I've been a marketer my whole life, right? And writing's kind of a key marketing skill. And I know I suck at that. Right. So like, I've always had on my teams, I've always had a person who's a great writer. Like, writing is not my strong point. I do good enough writing. And a lot of that's just because I've had a lot of experience writing, but I'm not a great writer. So I knew that an editor was going to, I knew what an editor could do with my stuff.
And have you tried to record it, like to transcribe you speaking over it and then using it as the source of the book?
No, I didn't. Because I had training stuff and I had talks, and I think all those things are different. Right. I think the book had to be book. And so I didn't do it that way. I know other people that have done that, but I didn't.
So you hired an editor, you did kind of two rounds, and I like what you said about the macro versus micro. So an editor is not only someone who's going to just fix one word to make it more understandable. A good editor is someone who also look at your outline, your structure, the way it flows from a macro level, and then they would go into the micro after that, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. So once you're on this stage, then is it when you hire this company to help you like self-publish and launch the book? Yeah.
Yeah. So the editors work for this company. So I hired them, and the editor comes with them. So I hired them, and then, you know, and at this point I hired them at like about this time last year. And the idea was I was going to have a book out by the fall. But then there was just like, so first I ended up having to do a rewrite, and that caused a delay of about a month. But then I don't know, like they missed every date they gave me. Like, like every date they gave me, we did not make.
So without mentioning who they are, obviously that's not the point of this conversation. But if someone listening right now wants to get in touch with such a company, in terms of positioning, actually, it's quite interesting. How do you call those companies? Like, what do they do exactly?
Yeah, so there's a bunch of them out there, and the most famous one is this company. They used to be called Book in a Box, and now they're called Scribe. And I did not use them. I regret that a little bit. I think if I was to do another, I might try them. But they there's a bunch of them out, and if you Google, like, you know, self-publishing consultants or, you know, self-publishing, whatever, you'll find them. Like, there's a lot of people are doing books this way now. So there are a lot of companies popping up that can help you with that. And yeah, so that's not too hard to find one of those. Okay. But I think the mismatch in my expectations is they sold me on how great they were at project management. Like, you know, we got the editors, we got the art, we got interior design, all this stuff, and we got a project manager, and we're going to project manage the whole thing. And it turned out they were terrible project managers, just terrible. And so I had to do a lot of the project management myself, which at the beginning I was really busy doing other things. And I kind of thought, well, you know, you guys are going to, you know, do what you told me you were going to do. And it turned out, you know, like most consulting companies you work with, like if you're not hassling them, they're reprioritizing your stuff to the bottom and some other client to the top. And so there was just unending delays in my stuff. And so my fall launch turned into a Christmas launch, and then it turned into a January launch, and then it was going to be February, March, April, May. Like, it was May by the time I got it out. So that was super frustrating. And it took me a long time to figure out, like, oh, geez, I need to be managing these guys better. And once I did, then everything moved pretty fast. But I wish I had have known. I took a call recently from somebody that's using them and said, hey, man, what did you do? And I was like, this will all go really well if you manage them hard.
I'm on actually one of the company you mentioned, right? Just to check the service they offer. So they could do like, they would do your proofreading. They would do the book cover design, interior layout, the distribution.
And these guys, to their credit, the work output was excellent. It just was poorly project managed, right? But you know, I'm really happy with the cover design. I'm really happy. I had a real specific vision for how I wanted the interior layout to look like, because I think my people are highly distracted and they need white space and they need it broken up. And I wanted it to look like a magazine, right? And I thought they did an amazing job with that. And, you know, that piece I was really happy with. But yeah, they do everything. And then they set you up on the Kindle store. They set you up on print on demand, you know, all that stuff. You do the marketing, but that's true for everything.
Right. So let's talk about that briefly. We don't have a long time.
I know, we're running out of time.
But in 2 minutes or so. So did you handle the book launch yourself then? How did you do that?
Absolutely. All of it. So 100% of that was me. So in my mind, I launched the book. My marketing plan for the book was just like a product. So I just took my product launch playbook and I'm running that right now, which is you got stuff you do before the launch. You got stuff you do when the thing actually comes out, but that itself is not all that important. And then you got all the stuff that comes after. So the before the launch was, I got to let everybody know this thing is coming. I got to get people a little excited about it. I got to, you know, and you saw me on Twitter and writing a few blog posts and doing a lot of podcasts and doing stuff sort of saying out on the speaking circuit saying, look, I'm writing a book on this thing. You should get on my mailing list. You know, this thing is coming. And so that was a good 6 months worth of effort, just laying the groundwork for that. And then the actual launch itself, again, because I was not optimizing for book sales. If you were optimizing for number of book sales, there's all these things you do. Like you do a big bang 1 day launch and you try to get all your book sales in 1 day. In my mind, that didn't make sense for this book. So I did a pre-sale. So I had a month worth of pre-orders and sold like almost 1,000 books in pre-orders. So you could sign up ahead of time and pre-order it. None of those books count as books sold on the day you sold. So if you're trying to get on a bestseller list or something, you don't do that. So, but me, I didn't care. I was like, this is a long, slow burn, man. This launch goes for a year. So I don't really care that much about what happens on the day that I launch it. The day that I launched it ended up being a good day, but it kind of wasn't on purpose. But I think maybe it was all my pre-launch stuff. I don't know. And, you know, so I launched the thing. I announced it on all my social channels. I had kind of a popular tweet thread on Twitter and that got a lot of play, and I sold a lot of books day one. I sold more books on day two. I sold more books on day three, which is weird. And so I hit all these weird Amazon bestseller lists for like a week, which was super weird. Like most of the time you hit for a day and then you disappear. And I anticipate mine's going to be sort of a long, slow burn. And then what I'm doing from this point forward is kind of the same stuff I was doing in the pre-launch, except it's post-launch. So I'm doing a lot of podcasts where I'm talking about the book. I'm on stages. And now when I'm on stage talking about this stuff, I can say, hey, by the way, if you think this is interesting, for $7 measly, you can go buy the ebook of this thing. It costs what it costs you to get a beer, for gosh sakes. And so, you know, if I did a good job in the talk, I'll sell a bunch of books. I also have some places where I'm going to speak. They're doing a bulk book buy and I'm selling a lot of books that way. But I'm not really, you know, again, my point is not like, I don't expect this to be some kind of crazy bestseller. I want to make sure the right people are reading the book and they like it. And so that's kind of where I'm at right now. And this continues on until the end of the year. Like I'm basically on the speaking circuit until November.
Yeah, you were sharing just before the start of the show that you were like going for like a 6 week nonstop book tour, for example. If you had to select the one thing that worked the best to sell this book, what would it be?
It's all the work you do before, right? So it's setting everything up. It's like people got to know you a little bit and they got to know that you're smart at the thing that you want to, that your book is about, right? So you'll sell more books if you spend a year on the speaking circuit talking about positioning. You know, people are going to say, whoa, if she's got a book on positioning, it's probably pretty good. I saw her speak at this conference, you know, and I'm on Twitter writing a big tweet stream on that, and I'm blogging, and I'm, you know, teaching a class, and I'm doing 1,000 podcasts. And it's, you know, people try to go for these big bang things and say, oh, hey, I'm here and here's my book and woohoo. And I think these things, they can sell a bunch of books for a week and then they kind of go away. I think you got to treat it like building a business. I mean, it doesn't happen overnight. It's a long, slow burn. And everything you do ahead of time is going to set you up for what happens on the day that you launch. But then there's all the rest of the days that come after that. Yeah. So it's just like a product launch. It's the same thing. You don't sell all the product on day one, man. There's lots of days left in the year. And the thing should, if it's good, get some word of mouth and go around and have people saying, you know what, I read that thing and it was really good. This is what I hope happens.
So I think it's a great way to end this episode, and it's a great summary of what marketing truly is. You just apply to a book launch. April, once again, thanks so much for your time, for doing this kind of retrospective about your book. I won't have time to ask you more questions, but I think people would have gotten a lot of value out of this episode once again. So April, thanks so much for your generosity once again.
Okay, well, thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Take care. That's it for another episode of EveryoneHatesMarketers.com. And this is the moment where I tell you to subscribe to our email list. So before you leave and go to another podcast or listen to another episode, I don't treat email list the way people usually treat their email list. I really treat that as a one-to-one conversation. So I'm going to send you very short and personal emails every 2 weeks, I would say. I'll inform you of guests in advance. I'll share with you my numbers and how many listens we get. And I'll also ask you for your feedback in terms of the questions we can ask future guests. And perhaps I can also have you on the show someday. So don't be afraid to subscribe. I'm not going to spam you, and you can always unsubscribe for sure if you wish. The second thing we need from you is your harsh and honest feedback. We know that this show is not perfect yet, and we always can improve. So you can send us your email at feedback@everyonehatesmarketers.com. Good or bad, please feel free to send me an email. And the last thing I'd like from you is that if you did like the episode, please share it to your friends, your colleagues, or whoever might like it. And also please review it on iTunes or another service that you might use to listen to your podcast. Because if you leave us a 5-star review, it means that more people will be likely to listen and we can spread the word quicker. So thank you so much once again, and au revoir.